Hey everyone, welcome back to Huron County Author Talk, a podcast where we speak to many talented local authors about a variety of topics within the world of writing. I'm your host, Hamilton Baker of the Huron County Library, and I'm excited to bring you another episode in Season 2. If you're a writer, a reader, or someone who likes to hear authors talk about their craft, how they publish their books, different marketing strategies they employ, and much more, then this show is for you. In this episode, I sat down with one of Huron County's local authors, Rick Hundy, at his home in Exeter. In our interview, Rick talks about his latest Jack Beer mystery, One Last Fix, which released earlier this summer. We also dive into how he experiences writing and publishing, the advantages and drawbacks of writing short stories, the differences between technical and creative writing, how he creates his characters, where he gets his ideas and creativity from, and much more. How long have you been writing, and what kind of books do you write?
Okay, I've been writing pretty much my whole working life. My writing was always to do with grant proposals and community plans and business writing. So you have to be a good writer if you're a professional in a profession that requires it. But the creative writing, I think, not counting writing stories for my children when they were little, not counting that, around the year 2000, when I began consulting on my own and spending my downtime writing stories. And then around 2004, I think it was, I entered the Alice Munro Festival contest and won first. And that kind of inspired me to work at it more diligently, and so I did, and I began doing additional other short stories and became interested, because my favorite genre for recreational reading are mysteries and suspense. I began developing a character who became my protagonist in a series called the Jack Beer series.
Mm-hmm. So you've always, as far as like creative writing, has it always been mysteries?
No, it's short story. Yeah, the novels are all mysteries. My short stories, some are human interest. There's a couple of, I have a collection of short stories. Some are humor. Some are creative nonfiction. Mm-hmm. Whenever the spark comes along, I'll give it a try. Mm-hmm. And I'll end up perhaps entering a short story contest or adding it to my website in some fashion.
Okay.
Yeah. Short stories and mysteries. Mm-hmm. I've debated whether to go beyond that, but I find I'm always gravitating back to my Jack Beer character. Mm-hmm. and his life. I've created an imaginary world that sometimes I live in that world, so it's hard to leave it.
Right. And actually, I was talking to another author recently about this, which is you seem to find a genre or a type of story that you like to write, and you pretty much stay there. Like I've been writing historical fiction since I was a teenager.
Right.
So I've always liked that world and that, and some fantasy elements too. So like I have my niche basically. And you know, this author, she writes romance. So like it's like you gravitate, like you said, to certain types of writing.
Yeah, you do.
Seems pretty common.
Yes.
Yeah. How many books have you published at this point?
There's seven. Well, six. The seventh is coming out within the next few weeks. So six Jack Beer mysteries and one short story collection.
Okay. It's late spring of 2023, which is when your book's coming out soon, right?
Yeah, it should be out within 2 weeks or so, yeah.
So I guess the question I have is, in terms of writing, what are you focused on these days? Is it focused on launching that book?
Yeah, there's that. I've also been asked to do some outreach work. I'm planning to do perhaps with a friend who's a comic. I'm planning to do some high school workshops on creative writing. So we've been working on an outline that it's getting some legs. The English department head here in town, through the South Huron Arts Center, has expressed an interest in a creative writing series within the high school. So sort of working on that. And I'm also, as I go for a walk in the morning, toying with what to do with Jack Beer. And one of the things that I'm contemplating is doing a story set in the late 1990s, when he becomes the police chief of Grand Bend. Jack Beer, my protagonist, is semi-retired. He spends half his time sort of running a coffee shop with his girlfriend, getting in her way, and the rest of the time he takes cases from clients who have problems with missing persons or solving a murder that someone is blamed for, but is quite innocent. So I'm almost at the point where I'm not sure I want to write about Jack in the present. I'm thinking of writing about what he was like as a police chief before he retired and became a detective. So that's been bouncing around in my head lately.
So the first book in the series, he's already semi-retired.
Yeah, he's already.
He's always been.
Yeah,
like that's the book.
He's a lazy bugger. He takes cases almost reluctantly, and he fumbles his way through them. But he usually solves the case. Occasionally there are loose ends, but he has to live with them. Mm-hmm. So I try to make him almost an everyday guy. There's no particular heroic or super talents that he can bring to the task. Mm-hmm. He's often confused and misled and follows red herrings too long sometimes. Mm-hmm. He gets distracted. I like Jack Beer because his distractions are similar to mine, and he's a big fan of 70s rock, even though for him that's that predates him. But he's a retro guy too, so he kind of lives in the past that he was never a part of. So mm-hmm. Yeah, it's he's an interesting character. Is that called your alter ego? I don't know.
Maybe, yeah. Could be. Yeah. I mean, when you're talking about that, because I watched a little bit when I was younger, Columbo. Is he at all, did you watch Columbo?
Is he
kind of in the same, I mean, when you were just talking about Jack Beard, like that image of Columbo came into my mind.
Yeah, perhaps he's, yeah. Columbo's smarter than Jack Beer.
I can't remember. Like, did Columbo follow red herrings too long? I feel like he followed his way through.
Oh, he liked to leave that impression,
right?
That he didn't know what he was doing,
right?
Because that disarmed his suspects.
So he knew what he was doing all the time, right?
And Jack frequently has the wrong suspect, but it's okay because to me it gives me more opportunity to explore characters that are peripheral to the mystery. Mm-hmm. There are little side stories that are fun that I can follow and then bring back to the main plot line.
That seems like that'd be fun to write.
I generally I plot out my stories. Mm-hmm. But I find that I depart from my plot outline in almost every case, partly because something occurs to me, those what if questions pop up, and partly because my characters are, I've developed them to the extent that they're believable to me, so that I know that if something happens and I propose that the character does something, I will often question whether that fits with that character. And so that leads me somewhere else, and that can take me away from my plot outline, which is fun because to me that makes it a more exciting process.
Well, because I feel like, with a plot outline, if it goes exactly the way you think, halfway through, it might get a little bit boring because it's like, well, I know exactly where this is going.
Yeah.
And
But if it deviates, yeah. Then yeah, I could see how that would be. Yeah, keep things interesting.
Yeah, I like the idea of surprising yourself when you're writing. Mm-hmm. Like some writers, I don't think use plot outlines. Some of my short stories I've done without any particular plan, mm-hmm. And they're fun. But I find as well that if I start a story without a plan, frequently they go nowhere. Mm-hmm. You know, you come to an end and you can't figure out where to. You come to a point where you can't figure out how to end it. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, just for fun, I'll write a short story without any particular end point in mind, mm-hmm. and see where it goes. But to do a novel that way, I'm not sure that's a wise endeavor.
Yeah, no, I mean, I don't use, like, my plot lines. I don't really have a super structured one, but I kind of know how it's going to end. Like, you have an idea, at least a vague idea. It's going to go this way at the very end. In between, I don't usually have a plot outline. Or I'll have ideas as I'm writing, you know, and I'll go, okay, that's for later, and, you know, jot that down as an idea for later.
Yeah. Well, one thing that's important to me, though, Hamilton, is having a really clear understanding of the personality of the characters.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, my protagonist, Jack Beer, and his girlfriend Sheila both have fairly thorough biographies, some of which never sees the light of day as you're writing,
right.
But they're there. The name Jack Beer, it's not an accidental name, although I think it's a cool sounding name.
Mm-hmm.
I decided, looking at my father's platoon picture from World War II in the Essex Scottish, that this particular colleague of his, whose last name was Beer, I decided that person was my protagonist's grandfather. And from there, I developed a bit of a family history. Actually, Jack's grandfather does come into two of the books that I've written along the way. So in that sense, the biography does fit in with my writing, but frequently the biography itself, it allows me to give my characters depth as opposed to, you know, factual detail. And it helps you to decide how he's going to say something or how he's going to react to something, or how he'll think through a problem. So if you've got all that there, and the biography solidifies actually through time as well. You know, the traits emerge that aren't in your original biography, but
it
gets to the point where there's a reality to these fictional people,
right.
If that makes any sense.
No, especially when you've been working with Jack Beer for, I guess, how many years has it been now since the first one?
2008.
So 2008, so yeah, it's at least 15 years.
Yeah.
Because he probably started that book.
Yeah, yeah, obviously.
Before that.
With the number of books, I'm not writing every day.
Right.
So, yeah, otherwise I probably should have 15 or 20 books by now.
Right,
yeah.
Well, I mean, I think I've told you, I've been working on mine for 7 years, so you're quicker than me, actually.
yeah. Well, they take a long time for me. I'm not sure how this compares to other writers, but my latest book, there were 15 redrafts. Although that's not complete rewrites, there were some fairly significant changes in some of those redrafts.
Mm-hmm.
And the editing process as well takes a long time.
Mm-hmm.
You always think you're done, and then you think you give it a couple weeks and you come back to it and you think, well, I'll read it one more time, and then surprisingly you find a few little things that need to be fixed. Mm-hmm. Usually there are minor inconsistencies that the reader might miss, but I do not like to discover such an inconsistency and leave it unresolved.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, the writing process can, for me, take quite a long time.
You said 15, I think mine is probably around 20, so I don't know if that's typical for other authors or not, but yeah, I've had several.
Yeah, drafts. Yeah. I know some other writers and who have talked with young people who who aspire to be writers, and what he said to me was that I always tell them that you think you're done, but you're not. You're not even close.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Which I don't know if I told you this story with my book. I was about 2 or 3 years into it. I had done maybe 4 or 5 drafts at that point, or 6, whatever it was. And I was like, oh, yeah, I'm pretty much done. I thought I was done, right?
Yeah.
And then I had Avery read it. And she has an eye. She's done it before. She used to get free copies and do reviews for authors when she was younger. So she knows you know, what's good and what's not. And so, yeah, she read it, and I was thinking, oh, it'll just be a couple little things here or there. You know, it was all kinds of things that needed fixing. And it was fair points. It was like, yep, that the middle needs more here, or the ending needs to be fixed. Like these different things where, like you said, you don't even realize.
It's good you have someone like Avery to help you.
Yeah.
And I think writers need that. I've got two writers, one really... sharp book fan and a former English teacher, each of whom give me feedback.
My next question was going to be, do you have advanced readers? Those are your advanced readers.
Yeah. One of them is my brother, who's more widely published than I am, and he's exceptional at picking things out. I shouldn't just highlight him. The other three are just as good. They have different levels of interest. Mm-hmm. One in my last book, Bruce Shaw, for example, in my last book, mm-hmm. pointed out that one of my characters required a completely different sense to him. I was treating this individual unlike his characters. In other words, the writing didn't match his character, and he was able to pick that out. Uh-huh. You can fall into the trap of following a particular style of writing, which doesn't necessarily... Well, I should explain that in my latest book, it's third person, but there's another voice in the form of letters from one of the main characters. Uh-huh. And those letters were too much like the script of the main body of the book. Mm-hmm. So, and that this individual who's writing these letters has a lot of baggage attached to him, and that just wasn't coming through clear enough.
Okay.
So yeah, he was able to pick up, and if the other three readers didn't pick up on that, but yeah, Bruce did.
He noticed that.
Yeah, I did notice that. Yeah.
Which is good to have different readers, because then they pick up on different things, right?
Yeah, none of them are mean. He didn't call me a dumb bunny.
Well, that's good.
he posed a question to me. Right. I don't know whether he thinks I'm too sensitive to take criticism, but he's a very kind individual.
Oh, good. That helps. Yeah. Which, and speaking of, I mean, we touched on it a minute ago. How long does it take on average to write a book? Like, start first word of a book to write. This one's coming out in a few weeks. So how long, for instance, this book, when you started it to now?
I think it was 2 years.
Yeah. 2 full years. Of,
yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and I wouldn't write every day, I certainly, if I pick a day to write, I would probably use half the day to do it, I'm frequently thinking about things and corrections or ideas come to me when I'm not sitting at the computer. So, yeah, it's I don't keep a calendar, but I'm guessing at the time it takes. Yeah.
Yeah. Which another, that reminds me of another question, which is you don't do, like for my first draft, for instance, I kind of had it in my mind that I'll try 15 minutes a day at least. A lot of times I'd go over that, but at least minimum 15 minutes a day, 5 or 6 times a week. I was fairly regimented about that. Sounds like you're not that regimented.
No, if I get on a roll, I might spend morning and afternoon, And that's fun when you really get into it, but I never force myself either. If some editing needs to be done, and I'm not in the mood, I won't do it. It's not a job, eh?
Right.
So yeah.
So you don't have to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Here in County Author Talk has their first live event coming up this October. Attend our upcoming live event and meet some of the local authors from Huron County Author Talk, taking place Wednesday, October 18th at the Huron County Museum from 6 o'clock to 9 o'clock p.m. Visit HuronCountyMuseum.ca for more details.
So yeah, let's go to the new novel now. We'll talk about that a bit. This latest book in your Jack Beer series, what's it about, or what's the main plot in this one?
Right. With every book or short story, I seem to always need an inspiration or a spark or some kind of springboard. And in this case, I decided that this sounds very typical or standard. I decided to deal with a missing persons case, but I needed to add a variety of twists to this missing persons case, and draw my character Jack Beer into intrigues not connected necessarily to the missing person case, but his own lifestyle. This person, a woman, comes to him, wants him to find his brother. And this woman was referred to Jack Beer by Jack's cousin because there's a Windsor connection, and that's where Jack grew up. Mm-hmm. But this cousin and Jack and his family all have serious problems and drawbacks and baggage attached to them, connected to the fact that Jack once had to rescue his cousin from a murder accusation by the police. Mm-hmm. He'd written off his family, but was drawn back in again. This brother, on the other hand, has various motives for being in Windsor and disappearing in Windsor, and Jack has to figure out, well, why did he disappear and how did he disappear, and what's my client got to do with all these intrigues? So there was a great deal of complication connected to this simple missing persons case that Jack has never informed of and has to discover along the way. And the discoveries include a character who becomes instrumental in resolving the case, and that person is a drug addict who has a connection to his client and to his client's brother. I don't want to say a lot more than that, because mm-hmm. if I mention much about these connections, the reader will not be able to discover those connections, which happen midway and two-thirds of the way through the book.
Right.
So the premise and the complications are where it all began. Mm-hmm. And the complications actually got to the point where they were driving me crazy, but they were all necessary complications, as it turned out, in the long run.
And just when you're saying about how complicated it was, do you have a way of, I guess, mapping them out or keeping them organized so you don't get, you know, lost in the mix?
Yeah, I do, and I keep doing it over and over again. I mentioned I have a plot outline, but that mm-hmm. changes, and I try to keep a little diagram of subplots and plots and investigative lines, and these lines they can't go in parallel forever. They have to intersect at points. Mm-hmm. The problem with having them intersect is that the reader is left unsatisfied, I think. Well, what happened to this, and how does it relate to your story? Everything's got to connect back and be brought together. So mm-hmm. if I do these little flow diagrams, even if they change along the way, that helps me resolve the conflicts and the contradictions and the complications.
Right. And I just, it's on the top of my head now too, I don't think you told me the title, or maybe you did tell me the title, I've forgotten.
It's One Last Fix, and fix has dual meanings here. A fix, of course, is a term used for taking a drug hit, mm-hmm. But a fix is also a term used to describe a solution to a problem. Mm-hmm. So there is a dual meaning to the title.
Mm-hmm. That's how you came up with it then, because it had that dual meaning, or?
Yeah, I had a lot of different titles along the way. I had I could look it up. There was a Dopers, I can't remember. There was an earlier title that I kept for a long time, and I just wasn't fond of it. It might have been just Doper's Fix or something, but right. The titles are hard. Like when you're writing a book, a couple things are important. One is the opening, and another is the title. There's more than that, of course, but if you can't grab the reader with those two things, there's a chance that they won't go to page two.
Right.
So.
And do you have a process that you develop to pick a title, or is it just organic with each book?
No, but it's got to be. There's got to be something that grabs me. You know, with Collingwood Fake Out, for example. Jane and I were walking to the downtown Collingwood to the Elvis Festival, and this isn't connected to the title or your question, but along the way there was a sign in over top of a store, an apartment, and it was on cardboard. Someone had written the words, "Elvis is dead. Get over it." And walking along to this thing, Jane and I were talking, and she said, "Well, maybe your next book should be about the kidnapping of an Elvis impersonator." Mm-hmm. So that became important, and then Jack Beer's interest in music brought up the question, and what do you call a song when you think it's ended and then it wraps up again? The song "True Love" by Glenn Frey. If you ever listen to that song, it's a great song, fabulous song. It's a song I used to hold my daughter in my arms in the kitchen, and we would dance around the kitchen to "True Love." And it would come to an end, and you think it's over, and then, bam, it starts up again. Uh-huh. So Jack was interested in knowing, well, what's that called? What do you call that? And so he came up with the term "fake out," but "fake out" also connects to the mystery that he's trying to solve, because people are faking him out and misdirecting him along the way. So titles kind of occur to me in that fashion. And I like plays on words. A Crude Business is about malfeasance and murder, actually, in the oil sector in southwestern Ontario. Crude, of course, has more than one meaning, and so that one seemed like a natural. Mm-hmm. Things Left Behind. I like that title partly because it connects to Jack's past and how he tried to leave them behind but didn't leave them behind, and it connotes sort of melancholy and mystery in and of itself. So mm-hmm. titles are important. They're hard to come up with sometimes, but mm-hmm. And I don't know exactly where they come from. They come from germs of ideas, little snippets of thoughts, mm-hmm. and sometimes it just clicks and you got it. And you don't know how you got it.
Right. Going back to the new book. Who is your favorite character and why?
Okay. I think there's more than one, but mm-hmm. His client, who's, I think she's about 33 years old, has a teenage daughter. And I'm particularly fond of her daughter, partly because she's got, she's a very strong-willed and feisty teenager. And she's got a good heart. And she becomes involved in the solution, and she can bring her smarts to the solution, and mm-hmm. She's fun. She's also quite funny. Oh. And she does things that a teenager would do that make me laugh. Mm-hmm. So I think I like her. I've got so many characters from all my books. One of the things I think I might like to do sometime is go back and resurrect some of the characters, and she's one of the people that I wouldn't mind resurrecting in some fashion down the road.
And like, maybe are you thinking like do a short story or something with them, with these characters that you really liked, or a side plot or something?
Well, in a couple cases, my characters became short story characters, mm-hmm. Protagonists in short stories. There's three or four stories in my short story collection based on Tiny Cole, the sidekick to Jack Beer.
Okay.
Speaking of Tiny Cole, who is a former biker gang member, club president, he's got a very iffy past, and I'm debating whether if I go back in time to when Jack Beer and he meet 24 years ago, mm-hmm. That he may actually have committed a murder, perhaps that falls under the radar. I'm not sure how to bring that in. Mm-hmm. But talking about biographies, by the way, that character Tiny Cole is based in part on a guy I used to eat lunch with when I worked on an assembly line at the Ford engine plant in Windsor back when I was about 22 years old. He was a really interesting guy. He was always reading books. He and I worked in the piston department where you could actually read a book while you're doing your work.
Oh.
Yeah, mindless job.
Right.
In any event, everybody avoided this guy, and I thought, and in that plant at the time, about one third of the employees were actually members of various motorcycle gangs. Mm-hmm. And so in some ways it was a scary kid for a young twerp like me. But in any event, we befriended each other. Because we could talk about books and we were in the same department, we'd have lunch together, and I had lunch together. We had lunch together and coffee breaks together for quite a while, and that ended when he intimated the fact that he had killed a man. And I could never tell whether this was a guy that was having me on, pulling my leg, or whether it was the truth. I tend to think it was the truth. And I slowly eased away from him and stopped having lunch with him because that disturbed me enough. In any event, this guy became Tiny Cole.
Okay.
And he was, along with one of his lovers, became characters in various short stories that I wrote.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there are spin-offs that I find are kind of fun. And this teenage, I don't think she could be the central character for a novel, but she could certainly find her way into a short story sometime.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that's interesting that, yeah, these certain characters that resonate with you, basically, you can take them for short stories. Like, they can become protagonists in a short story.
So. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and that's maybe one of the advantages of writing biographies on these people, is because they can take on a life of their own.
Right.
It's the fun of it all, isn't it?
You I was know? Gonna say that's the fun, right?
Yeah.
You build these characters and see where they go.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not a golfer.
No.
This is what I do.
Right. So. Yeah. So if you came across someone in the street and could tell them one thing about the book, what would it be?
About the last book?
About this new book, yeah.
That's a tough question because of the complications in the book itself.
Right.
I would say it's a darn good mystery.
Mm-hmm.
This will send you off. You'll think you have a solution, but you'll find that you don't.
So there's lots of good red hands.
Yeah, it's a book with surprises.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a good thing to say to someone. That'll get you intrigued, right?
Yeah.
I want to read that book now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Everybody isn't who you think they are.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And the next one, we were talking about it before we went live, I guess, but did you always know you wanted to self-publish?
No. Originally, I worked with, as we were discussing, I worked with Full Pop, which is a fabulous media company out of Goderich, mm-hmm. and they had a small, I guess, section of their company for book publishing, but I thought I was all set with a semi-commercial book publishing outfit, and we parted ways because they took a new direction, which is fine, and they're doing great. I did try to get a commercial publisher more than once, but it's tough. The business is these businesses are very lean, and they don't have the resources to vet every submission. Mm-hmm. And I gave up on that idea. And so self-publishing just allowed me to pursue something that I love to do. Right. And now I'm at the point where I this is how I'll do it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, just makes sense for you now. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I've got enough fans. Right. you know, I don't have a lot of trouble selling a small print run. And I do various, you know, marketing initiatives that help me sell books that are fun to do because they allow me to interact with people. Mm-hmm. And have a nice evening at a lunch or at a reading or some event like that.
Right, which is nice.
Yeah, it's enjoyable. That part of it's fun. Mm-hmm. I try to keep a blog and a website going, but I find that there isn't a lot of uptake, a lot of interest in that. So I don't really sell a lot of books through my website.
Right.
But I keep it going because sometimes an anecdote or a small story will come to mind that I can put out. Mm-hmm. And if people are interested in going to my website, I have two books that can be downloaded for free.
Okay.
Two short stories, rather, and they're both award-winning short stories. Oh. So if you were interested in getting a snippet of my reading, you can go to click on Buy Now on my website. Mm-hmm. You don't have to buy anything. You can just browse, but you'll see that two of the entries are free for download.
Okay, yeah. And that's rickhundy.ca, right?
Yeah, yeah. rickhundy.ca, yeah. Right.
Yeah. And so how many books did you write before you published your first? Did you write books before you published your first book, or did you write short stories before you published your first book?
Well, I wrote short stories first.
Right.
I have on the computer a number of stories that preceded my first novel that will never see the light of day.
Mm-hmm.
I might return to them. I do like one very early story I did. It was a juvenile novel. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of fun to do. You never know, might come back to that.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe I should send it to my grandkids and see whether any of them think it's worth pursuing.
Right.
They'll probably say no, but...
Probably not, yeah. And I guess that's related to another question, which is, do you have any manuscripts lying around or stories that you think, it's not published now, but yeah, it's a real jewel, I think, there, and I should maybe pursue that one day.
No jewels. I've got a whole list of sort of not prompts but inspirations that could lead somewhere. Mm-hmm. But nothing fleshed out, no.
So yeah, you've written short stories, as we've talked about. Do you find the process of writing a short story different than writing a novel?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Yeah, you would, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I guess how so?
Short stories. It's a cool genre in a lot of ways. More than the novel, you can pick things from your own past and use them either for fiction or creative nonfiction. So there's a lot of opportunity in short stories to, and of course they're short, so you get the satisfaction much more quickly. Mm-hmm. than writing a novel. And it can give, even to your family, it can give your family meaning. One of my favorite short stories has to do with my mother and father in World War II and my mother's escape from a bombing during the buzz bomb period after the Blitz. And that's a fascinating story that you can, there's only minor embellishment. I guess, can you embellish truth? And in any event, there's only minor. The basic story is true, and so that story is now there for my children, my grandchildren, and their grandchildren. It's there.
Mm-hmm.
There are stories everywhere that are lost to time,
mm-hmm.
and it is one way. This is a way to. Honor ancestry, unlike drawing a family tree, but it's a kind of a useful thing to do if you do want to impart some kind of meaning to your family's history for your mm-hmm. for your descendants.
Right, yeah, exactly. And do you enjoy one more than the other, or are they both equal, like short stories versus novels?
I don't find anymore that short stories jump out at me. I'll only write them when the urge comes to me. I wish the urge came more often, but no, I'd say I enjoy the novel more because if I was only to focus on short stories, there'd be long dry spells.
Right.
And with a novel, you have the fun of actually working through a story and the problems and difficulties over a long period of time. Mm-hmm. So if you're doing this for fun, the novel is where you want to go.
Right.
And if your inclination is to write a short story, but the ideas don't come for you, well then you're snookered.
You know? Right. Yeah, you're gonna be stuck for a while there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Did you know you can borrow park passes from the library, which includes a free pass to all of Ontario's provincial parks? Ask our staff at your local branch for more details.
Where do you find inspiration for your books, or is it about inspiration at all? Does inspiration play a role?
Oh, for sure. When you think about it, like, writing's a technical skill.
Mm-hmm.
Creative writing needs the stimulus of an inspiration.
Right.
You know, you can't, you can be a good writer and not a good creative writer. You,
right.
Creative writing, it does require the inspiration. And something has to click. An idea has to crop into your head. It can be like in the first novel, Death at the Bend. When I think back to where that originated, I was thinking back to an old girlfriend, and then I gave her characteristics that she never possessed. But those characteristics were something I identified in someone I dated once who was a little bit scary.
Oh, yeah.
So this, you know, this person comes out of the past. Mm-hmm. And I can draw on, yeah, it's kind of a twisted way to do things, but I was able to draw on my experiences with these two individuals and create a character who is quite diabolical, but able to appear, a sociopath, able to appear quite normal.
Mm-hmm.
Neither of these people, even the one who scared me, were anything close to sociopathic.
Right.
But you know, that's where ideas come from me. I think about something that happened. I might hear a conversation. Some event might occur. Something happens in your family. Something your children did. Something you observed. Something you read. One of my inspirations for one of my books came in by way of a poem. And that poem was by Joan Vandermeer, and that was Things Left Behind, and it was a very creepy poem that led to a million questions. You think about, there's a past here, what does that mean? So the poem became something that I had to resolve. I thought, I talked to Joan and I said, are you ever going to write a story from this? And so I got permission to use her poem, and the what if questions that popped out at me when I read the poem. What happened to you? Why did you write this? Why are you so angry?
Mm-hmm.
And all that stuff comes out. So the prompts can come. There are even prompts. You can Google writing prompts and come up with prompts.
Oh,
but
yeah.
To me, it's a bit more fun if you find something like this poem, or if you remember something from the past. One of my favorite short stories, Jane, my wife, and I were bird watching at McGregor Point, and we were on the viewing tower on the, I can't remember the name of the trail, but anyway, we were on a viewing tower looking out, and someone joined us, and this guy was really creepy, and Jane said something to the effect, when he left, do you think that guy's a murderer?
Oh, really?
So then I thought, well, what if he was? And what if there were other murders? And who is it? So that became one of my favorite short stories.
Right.
Out of that simple question, what, you think that guy could be a murderer?
Right. Oh yeah.
So yeah, the things, people you bump into, questions you ask, they all can spark the story that some of the sparks don't go anywhere.
Right.
But of course. Some of them, if you keep asking what if and why, mm-hmm. and what comes next, and what did this person really do, mm-hmm. and do we believe this person? Do we believe what happened? Is it the truth? Mm-hmm. So you get all these questions could come up, and they lead to a mystery, and they can lead then to a solution to the mystery. Mm-hmm. It all, you can't do it without that initial inspiration, that right. stimulus.
Yeah. That's the necessary jumping off point.
A lot of them have been used in the past. My mention to kidnapping. Mm-hmm. Obviously, all kinds of books have been written about a kidnapping. Mm-hmm. The trick is to find a way to make it more interesting, to make it more suspenseful, to create questions and issues and misdirection. So that's where the creativity comes in. Sometimes the spark itself isn't all that illuminating, all that outstanding, mm-hmm. but how you use that spark is the trick.
Right, the questions you ask and the places you go with it, right?
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
What is one of the biggest challenges you faced as a writer?
I guess it's a worry, maybe the same thing as a challenge. Mm-hmm. The worry is that I don't have a new story idea once I've done one.
Okay.
If I got an idea, I've got one now. I haven't decided whether it's mediocre or not. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's... after six or seven books, and we've got to go back and check the math again, but after six or seven books, I'm questioned whether or not I continue with Jack in the present, because it seems I may have done as much as I can with Jack in the present. Mm-hmm. So that prompts me to ask whether or not I leave Jack behind for a while, or I go back in time and think about him as a young man. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, the question is always, do I have something else to do next?
Right, right. And yeah, I was just thinking about what you were saying a bit earlier ago, which is, if you don't really love an idea a lot, or love a premise or a character, then yeah, you can't stay with that for the length of it takes to write a novel. Like if it takes you 2 years or 7 or 10, just that idea of if you don't love it enough, then it falters. Which sounds like with Jack Beer, you've never had that issue. You've always been interested in and loved that idea or that character enough to keep going with them, right?
Yes. And with Jack Beer, what happens in my view of Jack Beer is I'm thinking he's said that before or he's done that before. Or he's goofed off and made this mistake before, or he's gone off, or he's gotten too lazy, and isn't that laziness something that he collects baseball cards? In a couple of books, he goes off on these little excursions to try to find a rookie card for Al Kaline or something. Mm-hmm. He did that when he was looking for Willie Mays, you know. So I don't think it's repetitious yet, but I think if I'm not careful, it could become repetitious, which is what led me to think that I've got to come up with a new idea for Jack.
Right. So is writing predominantly a pleasure for you, a struggle, or something in between?
Oh, there's always a bit of struggle, but it's primarily fun. I'm retired. And as I said a minute ago, I don't golf.
Right.
So, for me, there's family. There's going for walks. There's gardening and there's writing. Mm-hmm. And it's fun. It's recreation.
It's one of the pleasures of life.
Right? Yeah, yeah,
yeah, yeah. It's a good thing.
It gives me a purpose beyond. If I spend all my time gardening and walking, then that seems like not nearly enough. Right. You need something that brings a satisfaction, some kind of purpose. And this is it. You know, I do volunteer work less now, but that was another area where you get satisfaction. But this is a big one for me.
It's a satisfying experience writing books and short stories.
Yeah, I've had people get in touch with me and say, "Oh, you made me laugh. Mm-hmm. That was so funny," or "I couldn't figure it out till the end." Mm-hmm. And I think, "Well, it's working."
Yeah,
I get that feedback, and that gives me pleasure.
Yeah, that would be very satisfying to hear that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, I've had good reviews from Joan Barfoot in London Free Press, which also gives me a reason to carry on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, nice. What other authors are you friends with, and how have they helped you become a better writer?
Well, do you want names?
Sure, yeah.
Well, Kathy Brown is a self-published writer, and I've worked with her. My brother Ian is a writer, and I worked with her. Although we don't collaborate much on the actual writing, we do read each other's stuff, and that's the chap who helps me with cover design and formatting, and Ben Forrest. He's a really good writer.
Mm-hmm.
And then I belong to a couple of book clubs, and there are writers in both those clubs. Not book clubs, writers groups, and there are writers those two groups that we chat with each other. Mm-hmm. So I could use some more of that sort of thing, I think. But over the last few years, COVID kind of created isolation that we've all got to get around, I think, and start doing more with each other.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of good writers around who aren't commercially published,
right.
And which underscores the point we were making earlier that you do it for fun first of all, and it's a bonus if you can make a career or a business out of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and going back, I'm just thinking, like, when you first started writing, maybe think about that back in 2004, short stories, and then those novels came after that.
Yeah.
Were you already, because you wrote as part of your career,
yeah,
so you were already, maybe already had the skills to write stories when it came time to write your creative?
I think I was a good writer. I was able to get pretty good grants,
right?
That I think I won them, those grants. For example, one grant granting agency told me that on the facts alone, our proposal may have been further down the list, but we were able to sell our proposal more effectively. So that told me I was a pretty darn good writer.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a technical thing, though. Writing is a technical skill that through some talent, but hard work and practice, you get better at. But back to your question, it still comes back to with that basis helped me.
Mm-hmm.
But I knew as I was working for different clients, if there was downtime, that I had a lot more fun playing around at short stories.
Right.
So the connection from technical skill writing well for a client or on a contract basis, the shift over to creative writing required that other essential ingredient, and that is inspiration and creativity.
Mm-hmm.
That's something I think is harder, in my view, it's harder to learn than the skills associated with good writing.
Okay.
I think that's something that you have to nurture in different ways. You have to play with it. You have to talk to people about it. You have to goof around with your grandkids and make things up.
Right.
And if you do that a lot, I think crazy ideas can find their way to paper. Funny ideas can find their way to paper. You know, issues of mystery, questions of of what if and why not, they start entering into your mind, and then they can find their way to the paper.
Right. I was just thinking, like, yeah, you cultivate that space. If you always have that space, like, you're constantly cultivating in one way or another, it's more likely that it's going to develop and like you say, find its way to paper.
I think, yeah, and looking back, I've got to think that there's something inherent in people who write fiction that isn't present in everybody. If you think back to early family days, you know, how were you? How did you act with your friends? How did you act within your family? What were your parents like? Were your parents always doing silly things? You know, just for the fun of it. And I think if there was, and not in a conscious way, but if there was a creative side to your family dynamics, I think that can nurture something in a child that comes out later. And there's a lot of happenstance to how one becomes creative. And I think it's innate in some people. I think it can be nurtured and grow in others. Mm-hmm. And there has to be an interest.
Right.
So, yeah.
Which, it's an interesting thing to think about. I know, I remember when I started writing, I was quite young. I was 8 or 9 years old. And I thought about it before, like, where did that, you know, inner desire come from? I wonder, like, why did I start writing a novel when I was 8 years old? Like, I've often wondered, I don't think I've ever come up with an answer, but it's probably something to do with, yeah, family dynamics or innate or a combination.
Yeah. It's almost impossible to define.
Mm-hmm. Where that comes from.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, it's just an interesting thing to think about. Like, well, I wonder how that, because I did it, but my siblings didn't.
Yeah.
So it's just, it's kind of, yeah, interesting to think.
I don't think it has much to do with, you have to be intelligent, but there's a gazillion intelligent people that don't do these creative things.
Right, yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I don't think you can point to any one thing. It's
no.
One of those mysteries, yeah.
Yeah.
What was the best money you ever spent as a writer?
Spent?
The best money you ever spent.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, I don't remember what year it was, but I took a creative writing course at Fanshawe.
Mm-hmm.
And that was an exceptional program.
Mm-hmm.
That reinforced the fact that there were some skills there, that I had some capacity to do a good job as a writer.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, I think there were only two of us in the class that actually did every assignment. Mm-hmm. It taught me as well that there are different ways to write and that it requires hard work to get anything out of it.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that was money well spent.
Right. Do you believe in a writer's block?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it shouldn't bother you. To me, you just sort of roll with it. You think, oh, I'm not going anywhere, or I don't know how to finish this. Life's got more problems than that. You can't worry about something mm-hmm. like that.
Do you have a way, or does it just end naturally? Do you have a way of getting past your writer's block, or it just kind of comes on its own?
Yeah, you give it a rest, and then something invariably clicks. And
right, so it just comes on its own eventually, yeah.
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 Thank you for listening to this episode of Huron County Author Talk with your host, Hamilton Baker. I hope you enjoyed my chat with Rick as much as I did. If you'd like to purchase any one of his books, you can order them on his website, rickhundy.ca. That's rickhundey.ca. You can also borrow all of his books from the library. Visit huroncountylibrary.ca to place a hold today. Stay tuned for our next episode that will release in 2 weeks. The music on this program is Echo by Alan McKellis. Thank you for listening.